What's up, college baseball fans? Episode 56 of the 11.7 podcast brought to you by College Baseball Hub. We have some College World Series news to talk about. You guys stay with us. Let's get it. Thank you, college baseball fans, for listening to us for a 56th time. We are live right now, right after one of the most incredible comebacks we've seen so far in the postseason. We have Louisville walking off Mississippi State in dramatic fashion, and it seems like the...
We got some hot takes.
Yeah, we'll start with that. Hot takes. So, James, lead us off with some Louisville talk. I know you have something great to tell the fans.
Well...
Give us a little synopsis of what went on.
Hot take, hard-hitting analysis. The Final Four is set. Texas Tech, Michigan, Vanderbilt, Louisville. Despite Louisville's best efforts, they did win a baseball game 30 minutes ago.
Louisville was just trying to give that game away.
I'm telling you.
They were like, please blow us out. Don't keep it close in the ninth.
And Mississippi State was more than willing to oblige them. But... I'm telling you, man, I said it a couple weeks ago. Teams have their own they have strategies. They have their own beliefs. And Louisville's belief is, boy, we are going to run. We're going to run. We're going to run. We're going to run in our sleep. And they made three outs on the bases today. They also bunted. They should have made a fourth out on the base. The tying run that was scored. I guess we'll start it right from the thing that's most relevant. Louisville ties the game on a base hit to center with nobody out, runner on second. A general rule of thumb is if the outfielder has the ball in his glove and you're touching third base, probably shouldn't run.
Right.
So that's basically what happens. Jake Mangum makes the throw of his life, like money throw to home plate. The ball beats the runner. The catcher just drops it, blocks the plate. Tie game, runner's safe. So it should have been a fourth out they ran into on the bases.
And what was the runner doing? He literally had 8 feet to slide, and he sticks his left hand right on the catcher's foot.
Yeah,
Who didn't move his foot for 16 seconds. It was there, and it did not move, and the runner slid right into his foot. Just trying to give the game away. Like, you know what? We actually don't want to win this. Please tag me out.
Totally wild.
And you mentioned already the Jake Mangum throw. I mean, we've seen Jake Mangum for 4 years throw a ball, 78 miles an hour from the outfield.
Not this and throw, my friend.
This one somehow had a little extra juice behind it, had a little bit of Jesus juice, a.k.a. Tim Tebow style, and actually made a beautiful throw. And then Skelton just had
closed his glove too early or something.
It was like his foot was in his catcher's mitt, and he was trying to close it. Like,
I know that feeling.
It didn't stick. And so Louisville...
You know something else? I'm still not 100% that the Louisville base runner touched home plate. Still,
He definitely did.
It's
surprising that the umpire saw him barely slide his middle finger across home plate, but he missed about 8 strike calls in the last inning. I was embarrassed for the umpire because it felt like if there was an opportunity to challenge a strike in college baseball, it would have happened for like 6 straight pitches.
You're exactly right about that. And Ben, when we played together some quality junior college baseball with some quality players and less quality umpires, our head coach had a nice saying whenever the umpires were not performing so well. He would just yell at them, flip a coin, why don't you? Heads or tails? Is it a strike or a ball? I don't know. Let's flip a coin. That's honestly what it felt like.
Yeah.
Except we're watching the College World Series with millions of people watching.
And then how about the second base umpire just running across the field, issuing a warning with 2 outs? I mean, in the bottom of the ninth, not 2 outs, but bottom of the ninth, the team is facing elimination. They have a couple calls go against them. Obviously, they're going to be upset. And then he just sprints at the dugout like, hey, sit down.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
And then
calm
him
down?
Flashes a thumbs up when they do. Like, oh, it's okay. I'm not actually mad. I just want authoritate you boys.
Like short of the players throwing something at you, just do your job.
Just don't look at them.
Yeah, like, don't antagonize. Like, you have to treat them like they're little kids and you're a grown. Oh wait, it's almost like they're kids and you're a grown up. Yeah.
Well, isn't that about right?
Yeah. Unbelievable. Hey, you can't do that. Why don't you do your job, man? Leave my 18 to 23 year olds alone. As long as they're in the dugout and not, you know, getting right in front of you. Just
right. But okay, so James, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Do you feel like that? As far as getting their players prepared and managing the game correctly, who did a better job? Because from my perspective, I felt like McDonald for Louisville, he did what he did all season. Like, he didn't change his game plan one bit.
Oh, yeah.
There was not like he was trying too hard. He wasn't over-emotional in the dugout. And I felt like Lemonis was kind of maybe in a bigger position than what he's used to. Because every time they would show him on the dugout, he would just be sitting there cross-armed, not doing anything. And I don't know. Like, I feel like...
Well, this was definitely a situation where the master meets the student meets the teacher. Because Lemonis used to coach under McDonald. And, McDonald's the highest-paid coach of college baseball. And I know that doesn't, like, make you a better coach, but that makes you feel like you know what you're doing. Like, ain't right. No one in the other dugout that I will play all season going to get paid more than me to do this.
Right.
Right? And there's a certain level of confidence with that.
Yeah, and even though McDonald, you know, wasted a whole inning as far as giving three outs on the bases, it didn't change him. Like, it didn't change his perspective on how he was going to coach. I just feel like there was a lack of leadership on Lemonis' side, because we've seen games, you know, on SEC Network on Friday nights where he's like, you know, talking to players. He's, you know, motivating his team, going out for pitching visits and this thing. I feel like he sat in the same spot the whole game and didn't move one muscle.
You know what? I think you have a point, because I'm watching the game, and after when there's that base hit and Louisville ties the game and your lead is gone and the winning run now slides up into second into scoring position, and like, stuff has hit the fan now. Like, it has totally hit the fan.
Yeah. Momentum has swung the complete opposite direction.
100%. And everyone knows that they're one pitch away from their season ending. You got to go out there and have a mound visit.
And just cool them off. Like, de-escalate the situation.
Someone has to go out there and lead them. And if you're not going to do it as the pitching coach or the head coach, then you would expect the shortstop or the catcher, someone to go out there and bring everyone in, because you got to come together as a team in that situation, because you're one pitch away from losing. Like,
right.
You have to get everyone on the same page, take a deep breath, because it's going to not take a miracle, but it's going to be really difficult to get out of this situation, because technically Louisville can go bunt and walk you off. Like, yeah. That's the beauty of being the home team. You get a runner on second in a tie game, nobody out, and you win. Like, leadoff walk, wild pitch, ball game. That can happen. Like, that can be how it works. So sure. I guess I want to talk about the Cole Gordon pickoff that put a run at second base. What I really saw in that pickoff is Gordon had slow feet. And it tried to have a quick arm. And that you need to have your feet and your arm moving at the same speed. Like, you see it on slow roller plays or shortstops. If they're running full speed, you might as well throw it full speed. Don't try to lob that sucker.
Yeah.
So Gordon did the opposite. He didn't have good feet. Didn't have a quick turn like you see a lot of athletic guys. And then try to speed up with his arm. It's really difficult to have rhythm and be athletic. Short hops the ball. And I thought Tanner Allen did a good job of trying to block it up, but he got unlucky, and the ball actually hit him in the glove.
Yeah.
Hit him in the glove.
And he was trying to make it hit off his chest, and it hit off his glove.
I felt so bad for him, because he just, you know, he did everything right, and the ball literally, no pun intended, just didn't bounce his way, and the run goes into scoring position.
It was like Cole Gordon's feet were thinking that the runner was – you know, 12 feet off the bag, and he had a chance to pick him off, and his arm was like, oh, he's standing on the base, and it just didn't match up.
Personally, it looked to me like he was trying too hard to step off the mound. Like, it really looked like he was trying to pick his foot up and move it off the mound just a little, like, too quick for his arm almost. So that was a mistake, and then another one that I saw during the game that, you know, I'm trying to provide some decent insight is a second baseman, Jonathan Foscue. He had a misplay on what would have been a double play to end Louisville's inning before a run scored is kind of like a hard hit ball off a slider. And he drops it, but they still get the out at second. It almost turned the double play at first. And what I saw there was his first reaction was to go towards the baseball, which as infielders, like, Ben, of all the plays you made in the infield, how many times was your first step toward the baseball? Like almost 100% of them.
Right.
Like a lot of them. So that's your natural instinct is to go get the ball. But it was hit too hardly. It was hit too hard, and it was going to give him a tough hop. What he needed to do was go back and give himself an easier hop. And he realized that because he goes in for a step.
And the ball was hit so hard that he had time to take a step back, field it. Because they almost got it after he bobbled it too.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe that. I was like, "Oh, the ball hit the ground. Got to go pick it up." No way. But you're totally right. So Foscue goes in. He has to go out, like you said, and that costs them a run. I mean, so that happened too. It was
Foscue,
hard.
And you can't blame Foscue for trying to go after that ball. Like,
no. This is
pure analysis. In his head, pre-pitch, he sees the ball coming, and he's thinking, "If we have a chance to turn two, like, we pretty much win this game." And he was, you know, overly excited, went after the ball, bobbled it, got the out at second, bang, bang, play at first, run scores, no big deal, still up by one run. So it didn't kill him. But, I mean, that's an all-conference second baseman over there, somebody that had an unbelievable season.
Yeah, we're just giving insight on what happened.
Yeah, and that was actually the second time that I saw a second baseman have trouble charging the baseball, because Auburn yesterday had the same play against Louisville, and ground ball, easy ground ball to second baseman, charges it, like, had plenty of time, and goes right off the heel of his glove. They score two runs, and that's all Louisville needed to win. So
yeah, I saw that one too. I mean, honestly, what those two plays come down to, like, you hear all the time, you have to go get the ball, you had to go get the ball. Well, those two players misplayed the ball because they went and got the ball. Like,
right.
you need to give yourself the best hop you can, and sometimes going get the ball fails you, and it did in those two situations.
Yeah. So we are.
What else did you see?
I see two teams in Texas Tech and Louisville who have battled their way through the losers bracket, and both teams have the completeness of a team as far as starting pitching, bullpen, offense, athleticism to actually pull off back-to-back wins to find themselves in the championship. But something that was surprising to me for Louisville, at least in my perspective, is they're becoming so much more patient at the plate the more they've played in this College World Series. So fast forward to game one, it felt like they were first pitch swinging every single time against Michigan's right-hander. I forgot his name. It's been a long day. It's been a long tournament. But they were swinging at the first pitch every single time, and they ended up losing that game like 3-1, something like that. And then fast forward to game two against Auburn, they became a little bit more patient, and then they had that like rain delay that carried over to the next day. And then the next day, they got even more patient at the plate. And today, I know that JT Ginn had one of the best starts we've seen out of freshman in a long time. 11 ground balls in six innings, only like two hits. But it felt like JT Ginn had to earn every single pitch and it might have been a credit to the umpire's strike zone. It was a little inconsistent. But Louisville was not going up there and swing at first pitch so that JT Ginn had the ability to go 8 or 9 innings. Yeah. They got him out of there in 6. And the deeper you go in this double elimination tournament, the more you see the wear and tear on the bullpens. And that was something that I think in the beginning of the game, if Louisville was free swinging and getting in and out of innings, 3 up, 3 down, 3 up, 3 down, JT Ginn, I think, finishes that game because he was like, his stuff was that good today.
Yeah, but it was early. His velocity deteriorated it was much different in his last inning than the beginning. I mean, he was sitting 93, touching 93 in the beginning, and he gave up a rocket to his first baseman at 97 miles an hour on an 86 mile an hour pitch. Like, man, you couldn't throw 86 in the Big South and expect to do well. Like, you, much less at the College World Series. So by the time he came out, like, he gave everything he had for his team. He absolutely did everything he could to give his team a chance to win. It's kind of sad to watch Mississippi State at home. We said before the College World Series started, or at least I did, you asked me who's a team that you think the fans of Omaha could gravitate towards. I thought it was Mississippi State based off their improbable run last year and just the kind of the charisma the
pure
some of the players.
Yeah, and the pure tradition that they've had. It felt like this was the year that they finally get their first national championship.
Alas, it is not, and we are going to see. I'm going to give you a subtle plug here, man. Why don't you tell the fans what is so cool about the Final Four and the teams participating in it in our College World Series?
Oh, I thought you meant like a real plug. No, so this is the first time in my, at least since I can remember, where the Final Four teams all come from different Power Five conferences. So before the season started, everybody was all about the SEC. They're going to have, you know, the three best teams in the nation, which they still might have, you know, if this was broken down into different brackets. They also thought that the ACC was a power, like, you know, blah, 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 Big 12, Pac-12. Well, this year, our Final Four teams are Big 12, Big 10, ACC, SEC, which is great for college baseball.
Amen.
Because now you get different quadrants of the geographic layout of America involved. You have a team in West Texas. You have a team in the north with Michigan. You have a team and right in the heart of the country is Vanderbilt. And then Louisville, I guess, is also in the heart of the country, but a little bit north of that Mason-Dixon line, I'm sure. I don't know. I didn't pay attention to history class. But
we got GPS these days, man.
GPS. But yeah, so if your team is out of the tournament and you want to root for different teams, you can maybe pick a team that you live close to. If you live in Oklahoma, like maybe you go for Texas Tech, or maybe you go against you pick everybody but Texas Tech if you hate Texas Tech. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
it's good. Definitely good for the game of college baseball because fans in different parts of the country will now have a reason to watch more so than if it's just a couple teams from the SEC.
Yeah, and it's ultimately, you know, what conference is the best? You have everybody except for the Pac-12 as far as Power Five, and now they just battle it out.
That, how about that? In a year where four different conferences represent the Final Four, the Pac-12 comes through with nada.
Nada.
Zero.
Zero.
No representation, even in Omaha at all. But, you know, I'm looking ahead to tomorrow. We have Texas Tech and Michigan, the day game, followed by Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, the night game. I was just thinking about the Michigan-Texas Tech. What this, in essence, has turned into?
Wait, before we get into this, let me give my little take I've been waiting on. I think when it comes to this point and both teams need to beat the other team twice, I think they should flip brackets.
Ooh.
Why not?
Oh, of all the things you've said, I'm definitely the biggest fan of this.
Like, if you're a 2-0 team and the other side has a 2-0 team, like, I don't want to see them play again.
I like that.
This is literally a matchup for day one, game one, day two, game one. We've already seen Michigan and Texas Tech play. We've already seen Louisville and Vanderbilt play. Let's flip the bracket. Let's go Texas Tech, Louisville, Michigan, Vanderbilt.
I like it.
Why not?
Not Michigan, Vanderbilt, because they're the two 2-0 teams. You want to make
– Oh,
gotta,
sorry.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah. Texas Tech, Vandy, Michigan, Louisville.
Yes. I'm a big fan of that idea. You know what? We're going to add that to the long list of changes we can make to make college baseball even better than it already is. That's a great idea. Yeah. How long ago did you come up with that? That's really good.
Let's see. It's 12:16 a.m. Friday. It was about 12:14 Friday when I came up with that. So.
That you just can't teach that.
It's my brain, man. My brain is wired differently than every single person in the world. I wouldn't wish anybody to have my brain, even to my worst enemy. Because like you're just constantly thinking of the weirdest ideas out there.
You know what? I can vouch for it. I lived with this man for about almost a year and never a dull moment.
Yeah. It's like a racquetball court where four sides all enclosed, ball bouncing from each corner constantly.
Dude, I think in a racquetball court, there are balls hit harder than we've seen at Omaha in this college world. I mean, Vanderbilt.
Don't get me started.
Vanderbilt exploded for six runs today. I mean, just.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. They just ruined my scorecard. Goodness gracious.
Six runs. I didn't know what to do with six runs.
I know.
And that was actually the only game so far. If you're a gambler or if you're interested in gambling, out of the however many games we've seen play, I think 14 now. Maybe yeah. less. 13, 14, 12, somewhere in there. The over has only hit one game, and it was by half a run in the Mississippi State Vanderbilt game. 6-3, nine runs. The over under was set at 8.5. Every single game other than that has been under. And maybe, I don't know if I've already done this on the podcast or not, but let me explain my reasoning why they should move the fences in. It's not because of the home run, guys. We've seen home runs. Like, we've seen plenty of home runs this tournament. A good amount, we should say. Not too many, not too few.
But it's not about the home runs. Okay, that's what you're saying.
It's not about the home runs. People think that by moving the fences in, we're going to see less doubles and triples. That's wrong. Wrong. Sorry.
Tell them why.
Try again, and I'll tell you why. Because if you haven't noticed, every team has adapted to this TD Ameritrade atmosphere of, oh, the gaps are big. Dead center is big. Let's play our outfielders one step shy of the warning track and keep everything in front of us. And what happens is they get a lot of singles, a lot of bloop singles, as we've seen. Balls that are hit hard get caught, you know, on the warning track or in the gaps. And ground balls don't roll to the wall, ever.
Correct.
So when you move the fences in, teams say, okay, anything over our head is a home run. Let's take away the cheap single. And that's whenever you split the gap with line drives or balls bounce off the wall because the runners or the outfielders are running with their numbers turned to the infield. And sure, you'll see more home runs, but you also see way more doubles and triples. And plays at the plate are more exciting from outfield throws because they're standing 150 feet away, not 295.
Right.
So it just makes the game more exciting as a whole.
And we're not asking for 50 feet, maybe like 10.
Honestly, I think they should keep the fences the same at 335 on left and right field. They should move center field in to about 380 instead of 405 and then move the gaps in about 15, 20 feet, and that'd be perfect.
I agree. We should definitely do that. But
we should just go out and do it. We should just drive to Omaha in December and just move the fences in.
We are moving the fence. All we need is that. Duct tape and WD-40. Yeah. I think they said you could do everything in the house.
In college baseball, it's all you need is duct tape, WD-40, and the Vanderbilt whistler.
Who apparently is not allowed to be whistling anymore at Omaha.
Yeah, he said he will get ejected, which is kind of funny to me. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He's been doing it for however many years.
I do feel bad. I feel bad for him too, but man.
It's about time that he makes an adjustment. You know, you can't just go... And life advice here, life advice alert, cue the music. You can't just go 30 years of your life without making an adjustment. Somebody's got to humble you at some point.
It's
right?
going to happen.
And
it's
every,
gonna happen.
And every job, every relationship, every aspect of life, there's a little bump in the road sometimes, and you got to make an adjustment. So here's your chance, Vandy Whistler. Make your adjustment and just save the eardrums of every listener. Every fan, not only at the field, but also watching on their television.
Yep. You know what? It's better for college baseball that he doesn't do that, honestly.
I would say 99.9% of people would agree.
It's just like, it really just, you can't avoid
it. You know what
that.
Happened? You know what happened, right?
No, I don't know what happened.
This is my assumption. I think ESPN finally was like, oh, okay, these are actually nationally televised games, not just live streamed on people's computers, tablets, and iPhones. We want actually people to sit there and watch the game, listen to the game, and not
Our
turn the channel.
Our sponsors are getting pissed.
Yeah, and we're just going to tell them to not let him do that so we can make money. So
that is true. You want to get people to change. You affect that bottom line real quick.
Right. But I think we've kind of gone off on a little tangent, which I know our fans love. But let's talk a little bit about tomorrow's games. We got two.
Yes.
And I'm rooting – I'll be honest and upfront. I'm rooting for both teams in the loser's bracket to win tomorrow so that we can get two more games on Saturday.
More baseball. More chaos.
More baseball. That's what we want. We want more baseball. And so the first game, James briefly touched on it, Texas Tech and Michigan at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Matchup that we saw game one of day one, and Michigan became victorious. But this is a different Texas Tech team. They have a little bit of that I mean, they've been confident this whole time, but I felt like they just didn't want it game one. They just didn't want to be there. Very lackadaisical. Felt like they were going to – they felt like they had the easiest matchup, and they thought they were going to roll. But what I expect to happen is Micah Dallas get a second opportunity to beat the Wolverines. He's the freshman starter who's been nails all year for Texas Tech and kind of choked it up a little bit game one. He was all over the place, gave up some crucial hits in some situations.
Nerves probably got the best of
him. The true freshman had some nerves. But, you know, knock me down once. What do they say? Just try to get back up and do it again.
Yeah,
he's going to have a chance. He's going to get back up, and he's going to try to do it again, and I expect a different result. Now it kind of seems like the big bats, 3-4-5 hole in Texas Tech, between Klein, Young, and Warren, those three are starting to swing the bat with some authority, and they do have the power to hit the ball out of the ballpark at TD Ameritrade. So
this is true, and that is why I'm so excited for this matchup in Michigan. So here, what I was going to say earlier was, in essence, what these two matchups have provided us is basically it's a best 2 out of 3. And this team, the team that's winning in Vanderbilt, Michigan, they've already won the first game. It's basically what this is. You got to beat them twice, but you both have technically at some point in this tournament, you're going to beat each other twice. That's the way it's turned out. So it's a little 2 out of 3. I don't know. I like thinking like that. I'm not sure it's helpful. It's not. Maybe you like it. But my point with the Michigan-Texas Tech game is I feel if there is a team that really has the offense to explode, top to bottom, I really like Texas Tech, but they're going up against Michigan, who is sneaky good pitching, man. Like
Michigan's team ERA this postseason looked a lot like your junior college GPA. It was
what you're talking about. I was 1. On the 6. Honor roll.
College 1.6 gets you on the junior college.
No, man. Definitely not.
Oh, I forgot your mom listens to this. James's GPA was a 3.9, Mrs. Berry.
I had straight honor roll. I don't know what you're talking about. But I give you credit for trying. E for effort, right?
Right.
There you go.
So this is what I expect to happen tomorrow in this game. Texas Tech has to beat Michigan twice. Michigan is going to go out there. I believe they're probably going to throw Kaufman. I don't know yet. They haven't announced it. But it
doesn't matter who they throw. They're all good.
It doesn't matter who they start to throw because we're not going to see runs scored until about the 5th or 6th inning.
Yeah.
Texas Tech has the bullpen to outlast Michigan's bullpen hands down. So if Texas Tech goes into the 5th or 6th inning with a lead or tied or maybe even down by 1, I think they win the game because the moment that trouble starts happening and there gets base runners on, maybe Texas Tech jumps out to a 3-run lead in like the 5th or 6th, Michigan's just going to shut it down. They're going to save their bullpen. They're going to save their top arms. And they're going to just play for tomorrow. They're going to play for the Saturday game. Because you know what? That's the luxury of winning the first two games is you get one chance to mess up.
Yep.
And I expect Texas Tech to win tomorrow because the backs are against the wall. They're going to have to throw anybody and everybody. If you have a right arm and you can throw, you're going to have to pitch. But
what's wrong with the left-handed people?
I think Texas Tech has one lefty in their bullpen. He's the big meaty guy shaped like a pear. Katy, Texas. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of shaped like me. Blonde hair, mustache.
Nowhere near as handsome, but
that's not even a question, man.
Obviously. I totally disagree, though. I think Michigan gets it done. I am a believer in Big Blue. I'm a big believer in the pitching staff. I'm a believer in the athletic kids from the north who no one's been paying attention to. I'm just banking on the idea that we didn't know what was going to happen all year long, and Michigan is the representation of that. They're going to find a way to win tomorrow, and I would love to see them play Louisville. We were so high all year. Everyone was so high all year on the SEC and the Pac-12 because they look like the best teams. And I hope we get a nice ACC matchup with the Big Ten. We can just enjoy the madness. That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah. So let's move on to game 2 because I would love to see Louisville in that national championship series because episode 1, we had our predictions. I said Louisville Cardinals are going to win the national championship. And they're in the Final Four now. And it's going to be tough. And I'll tell you why. If I had to choose right now, and I'm going to sound like just a genius here, just a total genius. I had another chance to say who's winning the national championship. I'm going to say Vanderbilt, and I know everybody's going to be like, well, duh, like they're the best team left. Like, yeah, well, you asked me. That's what I'm going to say. But anyways, I just don't see the same team beating Vanderbilt twice because they're that good, James. Like, they have the depth in the order. They have the pitching rotation. The bullpen is good enough. They have some trouble sometimes, but the back end of that bullpen is electric. And just beating Tim Corbin twice might be one of the hardest things to do as the same team.
I agree.
And there's going to come a point where maybe in the championship series they lose a game, but they're not going to – it doesn't matter. We saw Duke beat them by 2 touchdowns at their own field.
Yeah.
And they come back and no hit and then destroy them the next game. So I've become a huge fan of Austin Martin. I've been sleeping on him all season. Mostly because I thought that he wasn't even the best third baseman in the country. I thought Cody Hosey was better. And I've completely changed my opinion. Austin Martin is going to be a number one overall pick next year. The number one overall pick.
If he hits like this, he will be. That's for sure.
The guy is better than Dansby Swanson can ever imagine.
I totally agree.
You can ever imagine.
Oh, 100%. As far as the game goes tomorrow, I'm with you. I don't see Vanderbilt going down, man. They're so deep, you know. And to add to that point, they're not gonna lose if Louisville plays the way they did today. No way.
Yeah. Louisville played one of the worst games I can imagine.
Yeah.
And they just found a way to win.
You cannot give yourself 8 innings worth of outs at the plate. Actually, 7 2/3 innings worth of outs at the plate. And expect to beat the team that had 13 players drafted out of probably only like a possible 9. Like,
you know what you know what I hope happens tomorrow? I hope both teams show up in all black uniforms.
I won't watch. I will I will not watch.
Yes, you will.
I will not watch Vanderbilt wear the black and gold pinstriped socks with the army helmets. That is tell me right now. I don't care how bad this makes me look, because I am curious. Is there any connection at all between Vanderbilt and the Army? Is there? Because Tim Corbin and their third base coach, I mean, they wear like these green.
You have it all wrong, James. It's not the Army. It's America. That they are America's team.
Give me a break.
Red, white, and blue till they die. If you ask right now what colors are the Vanderbilt Commodores, I wouldn't be able to tell you. Gold and black, is that what they're supposed to be? Because we haven't seen much of it.
Dude, you're exactly right, because they do have a USA-themed uniform. It's like, what's the deal? Like, is this the recruiting pitch? I don't know.
Blue, they're army green, they're gold, they're black, like whatever they just feel like.
Yeah, whatever the Tennessee State Lottery allows them to do, I guess. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know, man. Like, if I am a professional, meaning they get paid, if I'm a professional college baseball coach, right, if I've put in my time, like a lot of these coaches have, you know, they've seen some things, man. They have worked 8-year-old camps for like 50 for like $50 back in the day, right? Like $50 eating at the cafeteria. I put in all that time, and I gotta watch someone wear like a Toy Story army helmet coaching third base and first base. Like, what are we? You're not Air. Like, you're not Army College. Like, you're not West Point. I don't know if there's a connection there. Then I'm an idiot. But I'm fine. I will wear it. I will kangaroo court myself. But there is no way. There is no way that Dan McDonald doesn't see those green Toy Story Army helmets and doesn't puke in his mouth.
I mean, who's another black and gold college? I'm trying to think.
Army's black and gold, obviously.
Well, that's a bad example. Come on, give me something better. Black and gold. Max, like, who's black and gold college? No.
Not really. Dude, freaking, imagine if LSU rolled out there with something like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, come on, man. But anyway, so that's what I think Dan McDonald's
saying. It would be like if Baylor rolled out in like red, like the Louisville red on red. And it's just like, what are you doing?
So, yeah, so I'm asking. Destroy me. I'm fine with it. I don't see the connection. Why there's – I mean, hey, I love the country just as much as the next average American. But, like, let's let's I don't know, man.
Whatever happened to Vanderbilt's just clean, like white, black and gold home uniforms.
Yeah.
And then just like on Sundays wear like the black jerseys with white pants. You know what I mean? They used to have some cool vests too back in the day. Mm. Nice gold trim around the white.
The David Price.
That's just what I need, like, out of a baseball uniform. And I know I respect these teams because, honestly, they're the best in the country. They can wear whatever they want. Who's going to tell them what to do? But I'm a very traditionalist when it comes to baseball uniforms. I think white at homes, gray on the road, and then one or two alternates that are your colors. That are keyword. Your colors.
Dude, that's a radical idea. You need to slow down.
Yeah.
You really need to slow down.
Something that hasn't been said in 10 years, it seems like. But, I mean, tomorrow there's a better possibility of Vanderbilt rolling out there in all black and Louisville rolling out there in all black than us getting an explanation of why Vanderbilt has army green uniforms with red, white, and blue letters.
Dude, I cannot get past the helmet.
You know what's going to happen? Tomorrow somebody's going to tweet at us and be like, Vanderbilt wears those because Tim Corbin's son was in the Army for 13 years, and now like, something like ridiculous. We're dumb.
I told you. I set myself up for this. I might look totally stupid. I'm fine with it, but I'm just being honest. Like, what gives? You know, what gives?
Give me a prediction for tomorrow's game with Vanderbilt and Louisville.
My prediction for tomorrow's game is that it is not going to be high scoring.
That would be in the majority there.
I tell you what, I can predict that if Austin Martin gets on and J.J. Bleday bunts him to second to start the game, I will not watch the rest of the game.
If that happens, J.J. Bleday's signing bonus would go from $6 million to $1
million. Dude, I'm telling you, though, when the higher the stakes get, the weirder sometimes the decisions – coaches make.
Absolutely right.
You know, it's just like, oh, all of a sudden change of plans. Like, I don't know what to do, so I'm doing something different. But
if you took Austin Martin out of game one, Louisville wins that game. Because all three runs came off an Austin Martin home run.
So let me ask you this. Does Dan McDonald right now, as he's in a meeting with his coaching staff, is he pounding the table? He's not beating us. I watched J.J. Bleday beat me. Awesome.
How great would it be if Dan McDonald goes first two batters of the game, intentional walk? Austin Martin, you can go to first. Austin Martin, you can actually go to second because we're putting J.J. Bleday on first.
We'll start strategy, Cotton.
We'll start from here. But, dude, we've honestly been gifted a treat here with the four head coaches because they are four completely different people. And I say that because Tim Tadlock is just the old junior college, you know, country coach that has admitted multiple times, I don't care about analytics. I have my eyeballs. I know what I like to see.
Fair enough. Do what you need to do.
Yeah. You got Tim Corbin, who's kind of like the manly guy of the group. Like, just very, like, hard-nosed, hard-headed. Nobody's telling him what to do.
Dude, he's the Tony Stark of the group. They've got some pitching lab just, over there at Vanderbilt.
Just a cool dude. Very, very high-tech. He's got apparently 100 scholarships to give away to 35 players. I don't know that rumor. I don't even want to get into that because that was blowing up my Twitter feed all day today. But you have Dan McDonald, who's the highest paid coach. He doesn't change for anybody. He's done the same thing for the last 20 years. Wears a towel around his neck. Don't know why, but that's like his thing.
He's like a boxing trainer. That's what it is, man.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that if I saw him at a restaurant, I would expect – like I would just expect myself to pay for his meal just to not piss him off. So, dude, I got it, man. Take the towel off. It's okay.
It's all good.
I'll pay for this one, man. Don't even touch your wallet. I got it. And then we got Eric Bakich, who is kind of like the younger brother to everyone. He's kind of like, hey, guys, like I belong here. I coached under every single one of you, I feel like.
He's yoked.
And he's just like, I used to lift weights back in the day. You guys want to chug some protein after this? Like, Eric Bakich walks into a bar and the bartender asks him what he wants to drink. And he said, hey, whatever tastes best with my protein, man. Yeah. I'll take a shot of whatever tastes best with my protein. So can you mix it in this blender bottle for me while I wear my watch six sizes too small?
Dude,
Someone needs to make a burner account called Eric Backich's watch, because that thing is squeezing the blood pressure out of his wrist right now.
That's one of my favorite takes of the whole season. I love it.
But seriously, but we're gifted with four coaches, and I cannot wait to hear one of those four's acceptance speeches of the national championship trophy. We're less than a week away. Like, we're going to have a national champion in 5-6 days, possibly.
You're exactly right. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot. What matchup would you like to see most in the finals?
Texas Tech Louisville.
Fair enough. I want to see Michigan play Louisville. I want to see Michigan play Louisville. I think Michigan, after watching them, and it's, you know, a lot easier to say it because they're here, I think they can beat whoever they play in the finals. I really do.
For sure. Dude, the front end of that pitching rotation is nasty.
It's really good. It's really good. Backich is doing some good things over there. I've seen some of the things they do on the developmental side, peeking around through their Twitter account. And okay, it makes sense. And all the other factors, think about it. We know Louisville will try to play the small ball and run themselves out of innings. It's playing in a big yard. You're going to have to hit three singles to score runs. They already have good pitching to begin with. I really think it's set up for if Michigan gets to the finals, like, do not sleep.
If these four teams played any other sport besides baseball, I'm taking Michigan's roster all day. Those guys are freak athletes. Like, most of them grew up playing other sports besides baseball.
And they're they're tough kids. They grow up in the cold.
Right. Like, is that a thing?
Oh, dude, you have to be way tougher in the cold than in the heat.
I've never been north of Virginia.
I'm telling you, as a kid who grew up in the heat and then spent 2 years in a quote unquote southern state, you gotta be tough to grow up in the cold, man. It is brutal. It is so brutal. That's my take on Michigan. I think they can play with whoever they match up with if they escape Texas Tech.
Texas Tech win game one.
Oh, I agree. Don't.
I think Vanderbilt can let Louisville win game one, and I think they take care of them game two. Michigan, you got to go for the throat game one. Texas Tech is going to be about as laid back as possible, and they're going to approach game one the exact same as game two. Louisville, I think, is going to go balls to the wall, high energy game one. If they win, maybe be burned out for game two. But don't let Texas Tech beat Michigan game one, because Michigan's going to just fold, in my opinion.
I could see that happening. I do. I would prefer to see Michigan take care of business in the first game. I think Louisville has a good chance. I've said it on the podcast that I thought Louisville could come to the loser's bracket and be Vanderbilt, but not the other way around. I like Louisville's bullpen depth better than Vanderbilt's. I know Vanderbilt's is more flashy.
It's really not, though. I was disappointed in Vanderbilt's bullpen.
I don't know, man. That's not what the common opinion is. Like, I agree with you, but because I like Louisville's bullpen depth better. I think they're just better college pitchers.
Right.
I just think they're better college pitchers. And then the numbers have been there all year long. Like, there's eight guys they could roll out, and I'm like, all right, they could win. Like, if their offense just gets out of their own way, just get out of your own
play. Well, it's been their problem all year. Louisville's offense has been very, very disappointing this year.
Dude, if Louisville gave themselves 27 outs to work with on offense, they might blow up and score six runs in a game in this game.
They're working with about 18 outs a game. They're playing a six-inning game while everybody else is playing nine.
I mean, Jesus, like, they freaking tried to bunt on the game-winning hit. They tried to bunt him to third. Kid got the two strikes, and Cole Gordon throws a cement mixing breaking ball. My 65-year-old dad says I could hit that, and I think he's right. That thing just sat there. It just totally sat there.
Yeah.
So, man, it's been a fun week so far.
It's been a fun week. The last note I want to say before we get off the show, little treat for the fans that have listened this far. Texas Tech's catcher is bad, and I'm not afraid to say it anymore. I've held this in for three games now. Texas Tech's catcher is bad, and Michigan might make him pay tomorrow. Between the pass balls, the six hoppers he throws down to second, like, managing the game, just all around bad. That's
a fan, huh?
That's my one player to watch for tomorrow out of both games. If he can just withstand The 9 innings behind the plate.
Maybe they should just hide him back there.
James, just watch. This guy, I've seen more pass balls, more bad throw. He threw a ball so bad to second base on a stolen base. The second baseman was about 15 feet like to the right of second base, and the guy hit him right in the chest. It was like the second baseman just knew, like, oh my God, he's stealing. Let me jog over there to my 15 feet to my right, and I'll catch this ball at my chest.
Just have the shortstop take it because it's going to go that way anyways.
Yeah, no, I mean, he just is bad, and he's like the one weak point for Texas Tech, stopping them from potentially winning a national championship, because Texas Tech's bullpen, I think, is the best out of the four teams left. I think their offense is the best out of the four teams left. Starting pitching is probably probably the fourth. They're probably the worst starting pitching left. But behind the plate, the other three teams just destroy. Even Louisville's freshman catcher destroys Texas Tech's catcher.
I'll add to your point. How much better could Texas Tech starters be if they had a quality catcher? Mucho better.
Mucho better.
Mucho better.
And the reason why is because he uses an Under Armour mitt. But and that's just bad. If you don't know baseball equipment, Under Armour, bad. Bad.
I would love to hear. I would do anything to be a fly on the wall on a Tim Tadlock team meeting. I would love it.
I think it's probably something special.
It's got to be.
Can you guys hear me? I can't hear you, but can you hear me?
Coach is doing that thing again. Can we just leave? No, you gotta let him do it, man. It's his thing. Hey, we gotta give, before we go, congratulations to Mike Martin on a historic career. He's really touched my heart in the footage of him. I don't know what he's like in the locker room, but I kind of like him, so I'm happy. Dude, for him.
He's a good guy, and I know we've given him crap all year. Good guy. Would love to have him on the. I would love to sit in a room and do a quadcast, us two, and then Mike Martin and Ron Polk, and just us.
Just let him go. Just let
us,
him go.
Us just sit back and point microphones at their face, and just enjoy the ride. But yeah, no. Congratulations to Mike Martin. Great for the game. I think he said it best. He said, "These are kids. I'm here to make them better men, and baseball just comes between." So, for all the high school coaches out there, college coaches, even the Little League coaches, remember that it's not about you. It's not even about them. It's just about developing them, and baseball comes between. So we'll leave you on that note. We'll be back, I don't know, whenever. I have a wedding.
Preview the fire.